Alan Kring Productions presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 4 for Spring Semester 2017. Lecture 9, delivered on February 20, 2017. The title of this lecture is Interest Rates and Complex Cash Flows.
Today, interest rates and complex cash flows. I'm going to introduce you to a sort of a variety of concepts today as we move closer to the first in-class exam. The information that I provide you won't be as, thank you very much for that. The information I provide you will not, there won't be as much new, but it will get a little more intensive in conceptualization terms. And then there's also the other part, too, that I will be dropping more specific hints and helpful words of advice about the exam. On the exam week, which is the week before spring break, the first class is, of course, nothing but a review, and then the second class is the exam itself. And that means that week, don't be sending me some phony thing about, well, I'm sick this week, when you're actually down in Daytona Beach taking an extra spring break week. I will find you down there. But I'll be dropping more important knowledge that I expect you to be able to talk to me about on the first exam. And always keep in mind, don't be fighter pilots on those exams. If I tell you this is how what you answer, that's what you answer. If you get away from that answer, that's when I start eating points. Moving along right now to the matter at hand. Interest rates, like I said, come in all kinds of flavors and varieties and all that kind of stuff. So what I wanted to do was, first and foremost, before I do anything else, it is important to bring up the yield curve again, just to let you know, keep an eye on this thing, because this is one of our best tools for seeing the potential for a recession. Now, over the last couple, since I showed it to you last week, as you can see, the curve is sinking down on the front end. Out here, it's dropping. Now, if it is going to invert, which it looks like it wants to, and remember, every economic recession in modern American history has been preceded by an inverted yield curve. However, not every inverted yield curve has led to a recession. We've had a couple of times when the curve inverted, but we had just an economic pause, not a full-blown recession. But anyway, where it looks to me like the vulnerability here is in the 7 and 10-year rates. If the 7-year rate kicks above the 10-year rate, that would be an inversion of the yield curve, a technical inversion, and that's when we can call a very high probability of a recession. Right now, it is not in that configuration, but it wants to. See how it's flat? See that flattening? Look at that right there. There's that flattening in there. That's the part that worries me. See, I could be looking at you, sir, and I see all kinds of healthy signs. You know, the sunken eyes, the pale skin, the rather moppish hair, all signs of a healthy young man. But then there's that giant nodule that is growing on your arm, okay? That concerns me. The rest of you I'm not worried about, but that there, that could kill you. So I have to watch those. I can't just talk about all the wonderful things. I've got to look at the thing that is the monster. You are a child in your room. It's dark in your room, and it's late at night. Now, your whole room is that your mom and dad, they put up Harry Potter stuff, and you got these pretty little things, and you got these toys all around. But there's that closet, and in the closet, there's this monster. Okay, that's what all the other pretty things, the My Little Pony on the wall and all that, doesn't matter. The monster is what's going to eat you. Okay? But that monster is in a very tight closet. I mean, it can't be a big monster. That doesn't matter. It's going, you know it's going to eat you. Moving along. You were kind of sitting back there while I was... Okay. All righty then. You had that look. Okay. Flat. Now, here's where my worry comes in. And I'm showing you how to look at things. Whether you're a finance major or some lesser major, I'm showing you how to look at the world here. Now I'm going to expand this, and then I'm going to ask you to look at these. Okay. These are one example of interest rates. Mortgage loans are actually, they are very, very common. They are a super common way for consumers to acquire a substantial asset. So we look at these, and if you look, you'll see that from a 15 to a 30 year, you have a rise of about 87 basis points. Is that 87? Yeah, 87 basis points. I want to make sure you first see that. 87 basis points. That would be almost entirely maturity premium. That would be, in other words, that normal extra reward for more uncertainty with a longer investment by the bank. Nothing really creepy in and of itself about that. Now, if you go down and if you look here at an FHA 30-year versus a normal 30-year, you'll see that the FHA loan has a discount of about 43 basis points. That is default premium. In other words, FHA loans are guaranteed and they are higher quality because there's that FHA inspection and all that. They're like VA loans. So you would expect that they would be a little cheaper because they're a little less risky as far as default goes and the bank getting burned by the default. So that's why you see that discount from an from a 30-year typical fixed down to an FHA. That's why if you're going to buy a house, try to reach for FHA. If you're not a veteran, if you're a veteran, try to get the VA because you will get a discount on the loan. Okay. Now here's the thing that is okay. I want you to look. From a 15 to a 30 year, you have a typical mortgage maturity premium. I'd call it typical, but it's an 83 basis point rise for 30 years versus 15 years because there's more chance over 30 years of interest rates moving adverse to the bank than there is in 15 years. But I want you to look at the 1 year versus the 15 year. Ma'am, what do you notice? What do you see? 1 year versus the 15 year.
One year is higher.
That's the problem. It shouldn't be higher. You understand? Maturity premium means it should go up as time goes on, like a 15 to a 30. Why in HE double matchsticks is a 1 year higher than a 15 year? In other words, somewhere between 1 and 15 years, there is a prospect, the market sees some possibility of extraordinary volatility, risk. That's what that would be. I would interpret that. It's just something that you notice. It's a little bit of an oddity. That is a commercial version of an inverted yield curve. Somewhere between 1 and 15 years, there's an inversion that that banks are actually reflecting right now. The treasuries are not reflecting an inverted yield curve. You saw that they like the idea from 7 to 15 years. But what I see there is there's somewhere between 1 and 15 years, there is some sense that there's a danger, a high degree of risk in that gap from 1 to 15 years. So now, let me, I'm going to take this off the board. What I'm going to do is I'm going to introduce you to some basic rates that are, that banks use to, as their basis for the rates that they charge you. What they generally will do is they'll have some base rate, and then for a loan to you, they'll add a certain number of basis points to it. Or a loan to a business, they'll add a certain number of basis points. Now, the one that is we talk about is sort of the base of all interest rates. The classic, almost a risk-free rate, would be a one-year Treasury bill. I mean, you know, it's sort of like the ultimate risk-free rate. And there's a three-month, six-month, nine-month, but these are sort of like a substrate rate. Interestingly enough, directly, these are not used by banks to form the basis for their interest rates. Another one that is very important to banks is what's called the prime rate, U.S. banks. The prime rate. This is the rate at which banks will lend to their very high quality, big commercial clients. And then they might say, all right, a loan to you would be prime plus 360. That's 360 basis points. So in other words, 3.6%. Their prime rate, you are some big fancy CEO, and your rate would be 2.0%. Well, if it's prime plus 360, yours would be 5.6%. They would use the prime rate as sort of like the basis for all of them. Some other rates that are used in this, one is that some places use is the discount rate as the basis. In other words, that's that rate that I told you about that the Fed charges banks to lend money at the discount window. The Fed sets this rate for loans to member banks. And so you might see a bank or some other place saying, well, we charge customers like you discount rate plus 400 basis points. So it'd be, if the discount rate is 0.25%, then you would be 4.25%. Another one that is used is the federal funds rate. This is the rate that banks charge each other for overnight funds. It is not set by the Fed. It's set by supply and demand dynamics in the giant pool of bank money. But the Fed manipulates it, tries to, through open market operations. Okay? And then there is this 800-pound gorilla called LIBOR. LIBOR is not a single rate. It is a complex of rates. There are LIBORs in time, the overnight LIBOR, the three-month LIBOR, the six-month LIBOR, et cetera. There are LIBORs across geography. There's U.S., there's the British LIBOR, the Euro LIBOR, the American-U.S. LIBOR. These are essentially interbank lending rates that form the basis for other interest rates. They're, in that way, they're sort of like the Fed funds rate. However, the LIBOR rate structure was the subject of a massive scandal about 6 years ago. The rates were being fixed by a small number of inside traders. They were fixing the rates. In other words, they were not free market rates as they were always represented. In fact, it was such a scandal that the publishing house, the company that publishes the LIBOR rates, minute to minute, hour to hour, day to day, was involved up to its neck in the price fixing scheme. It was that, okay, so the traders, you can type this in on Google, although I'd be a little careful with Google because Google can give you misleading results. Type in London Whale, W-H-A-L-E, and you'll see maybe part of the story. Some of the articles have been purged from the internet now that were involved, that were in this. Here's the deal. The inside traders who were playing, who were pegging and fixing the rate, they were probably also fixing other rates, prices, specifically retail gas prices, were probably part of the price fixing scheme. A few people I talked to that I knew at the time, don't know anymore, said it was all rates were being price fixed by these inside power brokers. All of these rates were being fixed, okay? Okay, now, the insiders were playing it. They were massive banks, their heads. There were currency traders, global currency traders involved in it. And the publishing house that published the results was in it. That publishing house was called Platts. And it is considered the place to go for quotes, commodities quotes, and interest rate quotes. Platts is owned by none other than McGraw-Hill that sells you textbooks. McGraw-Hill is the parent company of Standard & Poor's, which publishes data on corporations and rates, stocks, bonds, and all of that. So welcome to the matrix of corruption. The powerhouses in this were so powerful that raids on Platts and others in the scandal ended up with virtually no prosecutions because these were above the law. They were so large that you could not touch them, including McGraw-Hill, which strutted around after the smoke had cleared saying, "We were not involved, see, no one prosecuted. That's because no one could prosecute you." It's like Vladimir Putin, the strong man of Russia. He murders journalists and lawyers and opposition leaders with impunity, but who's going to arrest him? I'm not. I have no desire to die that way from radiation poisoning. But the bottom line here is that in a world where this is such a hugely important rate, the fact that it is not a safe rate, that it is not a free market rate, that it could very well be to this day a manipulated value, doesn't matter. We still have to use it. Now, got the dynamic yield curve. Let me show you something here. Now, I just grabbed this one out of the blue. And I'm just looking for some basic information. Being able to look at data, and first, before anything else, just noticing the obvious in this data right here. You, sir, what do you notice about interest rates just generally? These big rates like the prime rate, the discount rate, and the Fed funds rate over the past month. What is it that strikes you about them over the past month? Say that? No, they're the same. 3.75 and 3.75. 1.25, 1.25, 0.75, 0.75. They have been entirely stable for a month. But over the past year, what do you see?
They've gone up.
Yes, there has been a bump over the year. Right now, the best guess is that the Fed knows that the markets are extraordinarily fragile. They are, basically, there is a sense of, well, the apocalypse is going to happen, but it's quiet right now. So no one wants to be the first to say, oh, here come the zombies. So there's been this, the last week or so, there's been this real stability in the rates just because, I mean, no one wants to be the one who starts the collapse, which is very, very likely to happen. Very skittish markets. So the Fed clearly was on a very carefully crafted regimen of increasing interest rates carefully and slowly to quietly squeeze down the economy. But now it has stopped. It looks like, do you see that, how it has stopped doing that? And interest rates are staying stable right now until we see where things are going. Eventually, we might have, the Fed knows inflation is starting. They know it. Inflation itself is not the danger. It is when the inflation expectation embeds. And then, if the Fed tries to kill the inflation, it's not believed, and the inflation expectation keeps getting pushed into price rises. Madam, you have seen prices go up by about 10% a year for the last 5 years. Well, for 5 years. So I am a government official, and I say, we're going to stop inflation. What would be your interpretation? How much credibility would you assign to me? If you just keep seeing inflation going up and up, zero. Exactly. That's the point. That's when the Fed doesn't want to get to that point where it has not done things for so long that you don't believe it when they say that they have found the Lord and they have given up the sauce and they are no longer going to beat little puppies. Because you know damn well you hear a little puppy back there going, okay. That made my neck hurt. Must be that carotid artery that's clogged. Okay. Anyway. Now, interest rates and interest rate volatility. Let me show you something. The first thing to show you is, and this is just getting you comfortable with that calculator, okay, making sure that you are happy with it and all that kind of stuff. Knowing how to use financial calculators is part of the world we live in now. It would be great if you all could do it in your minds or maybe have an abacus in front of you, but that's not how our world works now. So let's just do a simple thing. Let's say we got a project. 5 year cash flow, free cash flow of $200 per year. And let's do a discount rate on it based on its risk. Let's say that risk is about 6.5%. Okay? Present value. Oh, actually, I better back that down a little bit here. Okay. So what we would do is we say, okay, it's reset. 5 years at 6.5%, payments of $200. Really? Did that suck? Try that. 5 years, 6.5%, $200. Compute the present value. $831 and change. $831.14. $0.14. Okay. No big thing. Clearly, the present value is going to be less than the sum of the cash flows. That's something that, interestingly enough, I'm developing a program for financial literacy to take into junior high schools with my business club. And if we don't catch people early, they will never understand that $200 cash flow hits over 5 years is not $1,000. We find that in intensive college environments like yours, we can get it done. But the average person you ask, 40-year-old who's just a basic high school or college grad, thinks it's $1,000, and it's not. There is no $1,000 in there. Anyway, but anyway. Okay, so let us take this up to, let's say interest rates. Wait. Before I do that. Okay. Madam, if this project cost $800 to do, would you do it? Say yes. Absolutely. Good. It's because I get $831 out of it for an $800 investment. Even if it cost me $830, I would still do the project because that's how the greed powers our system. If there is money to be extracted, we do it. Because if we don't do it, someone else will do it. That's how we get projects done. And, well, that's only a dollar. That might be a very, very useful dollar to us. It might be a good project. If it's going to come in as a positive net present value, in other words, the present value minus the cost, we do it, regardless of how big or small the difference is. Let's say that the interest rate environment goes up to 8.5%, a 200 basis point increase. And let's just do the calculation over again. Unfortunately, I don't know if you can do this on the free version of the calculator for your phones, but I can just put in the 8.5 here in the I over Y and then recompute the present value. Oh, spank me. $788.13. That project has fallen. That asset, and that's an asset, is now no longer worth what it was before. The interest rate environment has risen, and what we can probably say here now, well, we can certainly say that this project is more likely to be rejected, and that $800 cost that would have been a yes before is a no now. That's why the economy slows down during when the interest rate environment begins to rise. That's what's scaring the hell out of the Fed, is that if they jack up the interest rates, boom, the economy drops through the floor. As one trader, economist on Wall Street said, this is the Wile E. Coyote problem. Wile E. ran off the cliff a while ago, and he hasn't just hasn't looked down and seen that there's nothing under him. As soon as he looks down and sees it, he's just, okay. This is the risk of this. Now, the next part of this is kind of a little more interesting. But I need to stop before I go any further. Let's say interest rates were 4% and they've gone up to 5%. Interest rates were 4% and now they've gone up to 5%. And again, here's where I'm trying to I am beginning to separate you from the average person's thinking. I want you to talk to me, sir. Interest rates went from 4% to 5%. How much did interest rates go up?
1%.
Exactly wrong. And you say, wait a minute. Don't tell me I'm not saying. Actually, interest rates went up by 25%. Do you see that? I mean, what looks like, oh, that's just a rise of 1%. Actually, that's a rise of 1/4, 25%. 5 minus 4 over 4, begin, n minus begin over begin, is 1 over 4. 1% rise over a 4% base is a 25% increase in interest rate. That is a hellacious hit to an economy. So what looks like, just a 1%, is actually a massive, massive hit to businesses. And as you can see, what happens with projects is that as interest rates go up, the present value of the future expected free cash flow goes down. Asset values go down. So now I'm going to take you on an interesting little journey. Suppose instead of a five-year project with $200 per year, let's say free cash flow at year five is $1,000. This project, in other words, doesn't pay $200 a year for 5 years. It pays $1,000 in 5 years. Let's see what happens. Discount rate. Six point five versus 8.5. And let's see what the present value comes out to be in the two different situations. This one, I wouldn't even use a financial calculator. All I do for this one is I just use the present value of lump sum, 1,000 times 1 plus 0.065 to the negative fifth. You know, that one that I showed you before. I mean, it's not even worth doing a financial calculator. So I'll just pull up a regular scientific calculator for this, and we'll just do 1,000 times 1.065 to the 5 posneg equals 729.88. So right off the bat, long-term projects will have lower net present values, all other things being equal, because your cash flow is occurring farther out in the future. But let's see what happens when we go to the 8.5 line. So in that case, I'll do 1,000 times 1.085 to the 5 posneg, 665.05. So again, rising interest rates cause a drop in the present value. But there's something else going on here that's not exactly obvious right up front. In each case, we had interest rates go up by 200 basis points. Let's do this. Percent change on the first project would be the ending value, 788.13 minus the beginning value, 831.14, over the beginning value, 831.14. End minus begin over begin. Calculating that, let's see how much damage that caused. We'd have $788.13. Open parenthesis, 788.13 minus 831.14.14, close the parentheses, divided by 831.14, 831.14. The 200 basis point increase in interest rates dropped the present value, the asset value, by 5.17%. Again, let me say that again. The present value, when we went from 6.5% to 8.5% discount rate, the present value fell from 831.14 to 788.13. That means that the present value for a 200 basis point increase in the discount rate, the project lost 5.17%. Now let's do it over here to the one where all the cash flow was out there. Percent change, in this case, would be the ending value 665.05 minus the beginning value 729.88 all over the beginning value 729.88. Let's see what happens here. Open the parenthesis. 665.05 minus 729.88, close the parentheses, divided by 729.88. 8.47%. Madam, draw your conclusion. Complicated. Okay.
As the discount rate goes up, the present value and the value of the assets go down.
And if the cash flow is farther out in the future, it goes down more. The term we use for this, and I'll introduce this term more formally in the next lecture, this is actually called duration. It always struck me this is the strangest term to use, but duration, actually, it sounds like it's a time thing, but it's not. It's an interest rate sensitivity thing. The duration of projects is dependent upon the pattern of the cash flows. Cash flows that are more heavily loaded way out there are actually going to be more sensitive to interest rate changes than projects where the interest rates, where the cash flows are more loaded toward the front. That's why as recessions are approaching and happening, companies start abandoning long-term projects where the payoff is way out there. And they start pulling in toward projects that are more immediate in their cash flow consequences. Now, what this means in practice, and this is where I need you to help me. Sir, would you care to join me? Yeah, I want you. Now, I would ask you to sit here. Okay? Please, just sit on the table just for a minute. Okay, now. You can scoot toward him. Oh, yeah, you're fine. Okay, now. Just with a light lift, try to lift the table. Not violently, don't. Kind of hard, isn't it? Again. Do you even lift? Drop it. Okay, now. You're done.
Okay.
You go. Okay, now. Lift. Use the same weight. Gah! Without her in the middle, my ass is more sensitive. That's interest rates. Real examples for real people. Do you understand what? It's a physics principle. Those intermediate cash flows, how there were all these cash flows along the way popping up? They were creating a balancing weight along the way. They were literally physics, the financial equivalent of physics weights. And they were keeping the action from being magnified from the front to the back. With her in the middle, his lifting was not creating the same effect on me as when she got off. All of the action came on me as the present value. Never mind. I try my best to show you things, and all I get is criticism. But anyway. Now, how does this impact on you? You are an asset. I said, asset. Don't get touchy. You're so fragile anymore. We used to laugh and have fun, you know, in the mosh pit. You are an asset. No. You are all assets. Now, I'm going to tell you a quick story, and I've already mentioned this story before, But here's where it has some teeth to it. I take my finance club, I would take to places where they could meet the people who could give them jobs. Now, usually I took them to Chicago, but I made the mistake once of taking them down to St. Louis. There was so much bitching about it. I want to be in Chicago because I want to be with mommy and daddy and all this, or I want to be back with my gang so we can write graffiti on walls. Whatever. I took them down to a place in St. Louis. It was a very large insurance company, but what I was, that place down there didn't care about insurance. What they were the risk pricers, the finance people who actually calculated the price of risk so that they could charge, tell the insurance company what to charge the commercial clients. So in other words, you working for them, and they were throwing jobs, they were trying to offer you, offer jobs, internships. They were, essentially, you would be doing things like walking on barges, walking up 20 stories on a skeleton of a building being put up, looking at the risks, finding all the risks, and then going back to the office and doing the pricing. How much do we charge for taking this risk off the client's shoulders and putting it on ours as an insurance company? It was very cool work. You would have been all over the place doing really cool stuff. No one wanted the jobs because it wasn't Chicago. Whatever. Anyway, look. The guy running the place, good guy, great friend, he said, he told the people, you know, when we hire you, we are going to lose money on you for 18 to 24 months. You are going to be a loss to us. And then that will be cost of training you, cost of cleaning up the screw-ups that you do. This is part of the game. This is a long haul. By about the 30th month, we usually have you making money for us. Not much at first. By the fourth or fifth year, you are making us a lot of money. So in other words, for a company like that, and for almost any company that hires you people, you as professionals, as one employer put it, and don't take this the wrong way, please. She said to me, she said, we are in the business of hiring your kids because your kids really are great. She thinks of you as kids. But she said, but you got to make sure they understand that when we hire them, they're coming in as college-educated dumbasses because it's going. You just start when you get your degree. And then they spend a lot of money, and then slowly, with professional people of all kinds, and it isn't just college-educated, it's also trade craftsmen, the same thing. So in other words, you think about that when you're doing these, you see these present value examples. You are not this right here. You want to be positive profit for the company right off the bat. That is McDonald's. You can go in there the first day and say, may I help you McPlease? And I say, why McYes? I would McLike a McBurger. And you say, okay, McOkay. You almost got fired for not saying McOkay. Okay, but the point here being that you, if you want a low-skill job, you're going to make money right off the bat. As soon as you hit the ground, you're doing good. But in the high professions, like what we do, like what you're going to do, that's this. So that means that when interest rates start to swing upward, that is when you lose your job, lose your chances for jobs first. That's why we are starting to see you go to the internship fair. Oh, wait, why are all so many tables empty? When we start, a year ago, you could have said, I need a job, I could have made a call. This time when you say, I need a job, I say, lots of luck, sucker. No, I don't say that. But the bottom line, again, is that you are the project that pays off in the long run, not in the short run. And this is something that is not understood, is, interestingly enough, all of these forces that are hitting our economy, the artificial intelligence, the risk of a very serious recession, they impact you a lot more than they do the lower classes, the working poor, the working lower middle class. They hit you. And so the next thing that I want to do is show you just a little more using present values, just trying to show you how we have to think of the world in a way different from most people. I'm going to bring up the Illinois Lottery. Let's see if I can find the one I'm looking for. Get off me. No, I don't want to see that one. I want to see, bear with me one moment. Come on. Jackpots. Let's look at the Mega Millions. $55 million, and you won. Well, I'm out of here then, sucker. Okay, you won the $55 million. Well, they're going to kind of disappoint you right off the bat because they're going to say, no, you don't get $55 million. You'll get your $55 million in 20 annual installments. So what you're going to get, and we're not looking at taxes here, you're going to get $2.75 million a year, okay? I mean, obviously, you multiply $2.75 million times 20, you've got your $55 million. I mean, even someone who graduated from Decatur can do... Okay. I got to stop the Decatur jokes, really. I do appreciate it. Okay. $55 million. Actually, there's no $55 million. Let's go back here. Sweet. I did it. I actually did it. Bear with me one moment here while I go back. Come on. Just want to get the financial calculator up here. And fourth. And I want to do the financial calculator. Here it is. Okay, now. Let me take 20 years. Let's do an interest rate of, let's say, 6% on the discounted cash flows. Probably should put it more concerning the risk of Illinois. But we're going to do $2.75 million a year. Payments. Compute the present value. $31.54 million. That's what you're going to get. Let me try this. Let me make sure that we understand. Where is the $55 million? Say that again. It said you won $55
million. Well, taxes.
Well, no, this isn't taxes. There's no taxes. I just did the present value of 20 annual installments of $2.75 million. Has a present value right now of $31.54 million. The question, though, is, perhaps I should frame this, where does the $55 million fit into this? Where is your $55 million if you win this?
You don't get it all.
You don't get it. That's exactly right. There is no $55 million. $55 million does not exist. $55 million is one of those things that we now call alternative facts. It is not there. There is no $55 million anywhere in this. They can convince all of the people who buy lottery tickets, the losers and the winners, that there's $55 million, but there is no $55 million anywhere in the system. Does that mean that Illinois is lying to people? No. They're lying through their teeth to people. That's right. You see, and... Now, understand that you could actually, there are brokers who would buy the cash flow from you. You could actually sell the $2.75 million a year for 20 years, and they would, a broker would give you a lump of money. They wouldn't give you 55. They wouldn't give you even 31.5. They would probably give you something like 26 or something like that. And then you could have that money to do whatever you wanted with. But there is no 55 anywhere in the system. And that's one of those things, again, where once you understand the concept of present value, you find out that a lot of the things that you have thought about that were people think about are just the add up the numbers. They're not add up the numbers because the present value takes that out. Now, notice something also interesting is that if interest rates, let's say, went up to 8%, the present value of that money falls to $27 million. So in other words, not only is there no place that $55 million is in it, that $31.5 million is just a contingent possibility. If interest rates go up over the next few years, as they very likely will, $31.5 million suddenly falls to $26 million, $27 million. If interest rates go up even more, it goes down even more. And what that means in your case is because you are long-haul assets, it will take a long time. It has taken a long time to get you to this point right now where you're not constantly using diapers and constantly getting bitchy and constantly getting emo and threatening to leave home. We've gotten you this far. We still have years to develop you into a powerful, expensive, high-priced professional. And so you think about yourself in this regard too. Is that you are long-haul assets. You will have extraordinary value, but that's well out there. And as interest rates swing, first, your value swings with them. And second, if interest rates go up, you are the assets in the company that would be most likely to be axed first, especially in your early years. That means get your degree, get your job, and then think back on those fond days in that happy class with a guy named Professor C, who was the best memory you had of college. That's all I have for you tonight. I thank you.